we have to be very, very careful. What we're talking is not so much democracy, we're talking organised hypocrisy. Hard facts.
Reports are emerging that President Trump has decided to halt a covert CIA train and assist program for moderate rebels in Syria. And many publications are framing the reported move as a victory for Vladimir Putin.
In his first political remarks since announcing his brain cancer diagnosis, McCain said this: the administration is playing right into the hands of Vladimir Putin, making any concession to Russia absent a broader strategy for Syria is irresponsible and short-sighted.
Now, head of the U.S. Army's Special Operations Command has confirmed the CIA's decision. General Raymond Thomas, however, said the decision has not been made as a concession to Russia.
Picture, if you will, a world in which the Russian government announces that its FSB, its main intelligence agency, is ending an illegal program to fund, train and support an insurgency whose objective is to overthrow a sovereign government. Now imagine the furore that such a program would be met with in the first instance in the Western media, and imagine the outcry upon this announcement being made. And compare that furore and that outcry that would meet such an announcement with a distinct lack of any outcry in response to the announcement by the US government that the CIA is to end a program which did exist to fund and support an insurgency in Syria, which had lasted since 2013. And consider that the insurgency that we are talking about is dominated by a latter-day Khmer Rouge, whose objective is not to establish a democracy in Syria, but whose objective has been all along and remains to overthrow the secular government of a multi-ethnic, multicultural and multi-religious state, whereupon it intends to implement its very own Year Zero, involving the massacre of the country's minority communities who are able to trace their existence in this part of the world back a millennia and more. The New York Times ran a story on this announcement on August 2nd, and it's an article in which you will find no mention of the words international law or legality or illegality anywhere. But in this article, we are informed that once CIA-trained fighters crossed into Syria, CIA officers had difficulty controlling them. The fact that some of their CIA weapons ended up with Nusra front fighters, and that some of the rebels, the US-backed rebels that is, joined the group, confirmed the fears of many in the Obama administration when the program began. End quote. What did these fools expect to happen with such a program? Did they expect that these rebels, these Jeffersonian Democrats that they were training, arming and equipping, could be slotted into this conflict and remain inoculated from the attentions of the bad rebels? Do they think that none of them would join forces with these bad rebels, or that any of their weapons that they'd supplied them would fall into the hands of these bad rebels with a penchant for cutting off the heads of anyone who dare pray to a different god or pray to the same god in a different way? Is this what passes for intelligence within the Central Intelligence Agency? And just for a moment, I'd like to address my enemies within the imperial left, who still maintain that there's something approximating to a revolution taking place in Syria, and that all the problems stem from the big bad dictator in Damascus, Bashar al-Assad. What do you really think would happen if this government was toppled in Damascus? Do you think that it would usher in a democracy? Do you think that it would usher in a government that would uphold the rights of women and those minority communities? Do you think the Daesh and Nusra Front and these other Salafi jihadists would suddenly melt away by some process of magical thinking? Is this really what you think would happen? Let me tell you what would happen if Bashar al-Assad were to fall in Damascus. The country's state institutions would also collapse, the Syrian Arab Army would collapse, and what we would have would be mass genocide. Other than that, there would be a refugee crisis that would make the refugee crisis of 2015 seem like child's play by comparison. But Bashar al-Assad kills his own people, you say. Well, guess what? So did Abraham Lincoln kill his own people, and yet he's credited with being the most esteemed president in US history. But Bashar al-Assad is a dictator. Well, guess what? So was Joseph Stalin, and that the US and the UK joined forces with Stalin against the forces of Nazism. Do you see the idiocy in the position that you've maintained over the 6-7 years of this conflict? So I'm saying here and now that if this is the end of the CIA's dirty war in Syria, it brings down the curtain on one of the most ignoble chapters in the history of an organization whose deeds have regularly conformed to those of a terrorist organization. I'm John White, and this is Hard Facts. Well, one man who has intimate knowledge of the workings of the CIA is Ray McGovern. Ray is a 27-year CIA veteran turned political activist, and he's also the co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, better known by its acronym VIPS. And he joins me from Washington on the line. Ray, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. Glad to be back with you.
Well, the organization I just mentioned is well named because, for the love of God, we certainly need some sanity in this discussion. I mean, it seems to me that there are three strands to this story. There's the ethical strand, there's the military strand, and there's also the political. Let's start with the ethical, if we can. What do you think of the lack of outcry, as I mentioned in my introduction? First of all, for the illegality of this program, does this not prove that the US and Washington is drunk with a sense of its own exceptionalism, that these programs can be set up wherever it decides they should be set up to try and subvert sovereign governments in clear and flagrant violation of international law? Your thoughts on that, please.
Well, John, you're absolutely right. And for those people who are listening to you, to the degree that they're new to Sputnik and to the degree they haven't heard any of this before, well, I would just want to say at the outset, as historian Stephen Kinzer recently said, quote, "Coverage of the Syrian war will be remembered as one of the most shameful episodes in the history of the Western press," period, end quote. That's why some of this will be new. You asked about American exceptionalism. Well, you know, there was a time in Europe where people killed each other off rather regularly, Catholics against Protestants. And in the 17th century, there was a treaty concluded, the Treaty of Westphalia, where they decided this was a really good thing to do, that maybe they could work out something that involved, oh, let's say, national boundaries, national sovereignty, and that it would look, people would look askance at people attacking other peoples or other countries. Well, unfortunately, under George W. Bush, that kind of treaty, that kind of international arrangement, which really codifies morality, if you will.
That's a fantastic, you're talking about the 30 Years' War, yeah. But it codifies also respect for other faiths and the right for people to believe what they want to believe and to worship any religion that they choose to worship. Freedom of conscience.
Yeah, that too has, taken some real hits. But the idea is that under George W. Bush, and this was put in quotes, actually, that not only the Geneva Conventions, but other conventions against torture and other things were considered, quote, quaint, end quote, or obsolete, quote, end quote. And so please, and I'll be sarcastic here, please remember that being the sole indispensable country in the world, which all our presidents have bragged about over the last few decades, well, means that you're indispensable and you're kind of immune, or international law doesn't apply to you. And so the right to interfere in places like Syria, well, that goes with the woodwork when you consider yourself the sole indispensable country in the world. Now, they really believe that, the people in power, and from that stems an awful lot of misery, ugliness, and death.
Indeed. And with regards to the CIA, Ray, as I said, introducing you to the show, you are a veteran of the CIA, so you obviously have insider knowledge of its workings. I mean, this organization seems to me to be completely out of control, certainly through large parts of US history. It has been since the Second World War. after which it was established. It came about from the Office of Strategic Studies, which was the OSS, which was the Second World War variant. I'm currently reading an explosive book by David Talbot. I'm sure you've read it, The Devil's Chessboard, looking at the reign of the notorious Alan Dulles and going back to the Second World War, his role in trying to save Nazi war criminals, or those Nazi war criminals whom he thought could be of use to the US approaching Cold War era. I mean, the list of operations that the CIA have been involved in around the world, subverting, toppling governments, supporting coups, supporting terrorist proxies, the Contras, the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, toppling the Mossadegh government in Iran in 1953, the government of Jacobo Arbenz in Guatemala in 1954, Salvador Allende, the list goes on and on and on. What drives these people, Ray? What is the morality? Obviously, they feel that they're engaged in something that's patriotic, that's in America's interest, but it's clear to me that what they are engaged in and what they have been engaged in Syria in the current period has been Satan's work. Your thoughts?
Well, John, we're talking here about what we now call the deep state. That is a combination of military arms makers and intelligence services that have their own agenda. They're very, very powerful, and they have been since the period you mentioned. The coup in Iran, the coup, the overturn of government in Guatemala, go down to Chile, and later you have these people who are doing these things. Now, do the presidents want these things done? Well, Nixon wanted them done, and that's why Chile was reversed. The fellow who was duly elected was thrown out. But the deep state has its own kind of pizzazz behind it. Let's get back to talking about Syria. President Obama was sucked into the Syrian fray in the same way that John Kennedy, was the first president who I served under, was sucked into the escapade called the Bay of Pigs. Now, Kennedy came into office in 61, learned about this plan by the CIA to overthrow Castro, learned about how they intended to do it. And he said, well, you know, Eisenhower approved this, but this is a cockamamie scheme. Just, you can do it if you want, but just realize I'm not going to commit U.S. armed forces to support you if you get in trouble. Now, the guys in the CIA were much smarter than Kennedy, right? And they said, oh, all right. Well, we'll send this ragtag group onto on the beaches of the Bay of Pigs, and they'll get in trouble. And there is no U.S. president who at that point will be able to refuse sending the Air Force, sending the Army, and the Navy to bail us out and overthrow Castro. We know that. Those were on the coffee-stained notes of Alan Dulles, the head of the CIA at the time. The president's going to have to come to our help. Well, you know the rest of the story. They got bogged down, and Kennedy said, look, I told you guys, don't do it. They did it anyway. Now, what happened? Well, there were hundreds that were captured and released later, but Kennedy said to a neighbor, you know, I'd like to tear the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the winds. Well, that's not something you say in Washington. Alan Dulles was the head of the CIA. His brother, John Foster Dulles, was head of the State Department. This was the establishment. Long story short, they killed John F. Kennedy, and I can prove it. Okay? Now, fast forward to Obama. Petraeus, the sainted General Petraeus, says, Mr. President, 2012, we can do this. We can support the rebels against Bashar al-Assad in Damascus, and it'll be a very good thing to do, and we'll find moderate rebels to do it. Now, I don't know, well, let me simply say that Obama said publicly 4 years ago now that the notion of a, quote, moderate, end quote, rebel was a fantasy, his word. And yet he bowed to this pressure. So Obama bowed to the pressure and allowed all this stuff to go. $1 billion to support these quote, moderate rebels, 500 $1 million to support what the Army was trying to do.
The Pentagon had its very own program that was separate from the CIA program that was ended in 2015. And it was meant to train, it was envisioned to train, I think it was 15,000 rebels, US-backed rebels, to take part in the conflict. And it ultimately only succeeded in training and equipping dozens. I think it was like four or five, indeed.
You get it. You've done your homework. Yeah, it wasn't dozens, as the New York Times says in this latest article. It was $500 million. And how many moderate rebels did they get out of this? Five. Now, what's my source? The commander of CENTCOM, who's responsible for all this, in congressional testimony. So,
hey, sorry, I'm going to stop you quickly there, sir. We need to stop for a short break. I'm being told to wrap it up for a short break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after this.
Hard facts.
Welcome back to the second half of this episode of Hard Facts. I'm sitting down with Ray McGovern, co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, better known as VIPS. Ray, you were getting into a very fascinating insight into the Pentagon's program to arm and equip so-called moderate rebels. I refer to them as moderate head-chopping fanatics, as distinct from the extremist head-chopping fanatics. As we know, the Syrian people do not have the luxury of embracing such a distinction and never have, but that's a distinction that's been made in Western capitals to the shame of Western governments and their supporters in the media. Now, we're getting into the military consequences of this decision by the CIA to end its Operation Timber Sycamore. Over $1 billion in US taxpayers' money expended and wasted and tried to train, fund and equip what was essentially a third force. What is the military significance of the cancellation of this dirty war? It certainly validates Russia's intervention, and it validates the struggle, the inordinate struggle of the Syrian people, expressed through the Syrian Arab Army, a conscript army which draws its soldiers from every part of the mosaic that is Syrian society. That's a major victory, is it not?
Well, Jan, you know, the objective in the beginning, as expressed by Obama, courtesy of his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, was that Bashar al-Assad had to go, okay? Had to go. Well, there you go. The indispensable country of the world, the overseer, the imperious person, the country has said, look, we don't like Bashar al-Assad, so he's got to go. It doesn't matter that he freely elected, right? So you got to go. Okay. Now, they got involved. Now, who is the biggest cheerleader for all this? Well, that's one thing that this article does elucidate. It says Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel argued that the U.S. should take a more active role in trying to end the conflict. Well, Americans don't know. Maybe some of your listeners do. But you can't talk about U.S. involvement in Syria without giving due attention to Israel's role in formulating and enforcing and actually executing U.S. policy in Syria. Now, let me not talk in generalities. Let me give you a specific example. Now, in September of 2013, when it looked like Obama was going to bomb Syria or to missile strike it with Tomahawk cruise missiles, as his successor later did, there was a big flap out there, and there was a new bureau chief, the New York Times. Her name was Jody Ruderin. And to her credit, she went to talk to senior Israeli officials. And to their credit, they were candid with her, never suspecting that she would write it up and put it in the front page of the New York Times. But that happened. Now, she's writing from Jerusalem. First page, New York Times, September 6th, 2013. And she addresses Israeli motivation in a very candid way. Her article is entitled, Israel Backs Limited Strikes Against Syria. And she notes that the Israelis have argued quietly that the best outcome for Syria's civil war is no outcome. Got that? Best outcome, no outcome. Here's a quote. For Jerusalem, the status quo, horrific as it may be from a humanitarian perspective, seems preferable to either a victory by Mr. Assad's government or and his Iranian backers, or strengthening the rebel groups, increasingly dominated by Sunni jihadists. Now, this is what Alon Pincus, who was the former Israeli consul general in New York, told the New York Times bureau chief, quote, "This is a playoff situation in which you need both teams to lose, but at least you don't want one to win. We'll settle for a tie. Let them both bleed, hemorrhage to death. That's the strategic thinking here in Tel Aviv. As long as this lingers, there is no real threat from Syria."
Period. Yeah, to keep Syria in a state of chaos. And this strikes me as similar to the position, Ray, that was adopted vis-a-vis the Iran-Iraq war between 1980-88, that they wanted both sides to bleed. And this is Washington and Israel at the time. Very interesting how, you know, we get a return of the same narrative, the same playbook when it comes to the Middle East. Because let's be honest, Ray, this is a part of the world that the US has long believed is its own personal property by divine right. And you mentioned Israel, and you made a foray into Israel's role. Those airstrikes have been targeting, I believe, Hezbollah specifically. And this is where we get into another thing that's linked to this story. A lot of people mistakenly, I think, have attributed Trump's remarks during his joint press conference with Saad Hariri, the Prime Minister of Lebanon, recently in the Rose Garden, when he talked about Hezbollah in the same category as Daesh and Nusra and other Salafi jihadi groups. People say, well, this was a mistake by Trump. This is one of his regular mistakes, regular gaffes. It was no gaffe, Ray. It was no gaffe. Because what we are seeing is Saeed Hariri has a hatred of Hezbollah. His father, Rafiq Hariri, was assassinated in the mid-1990s, and members of Hezbollah were linked to that assassination. So this is part of the intricate labyrinthine web of Middle East politics we're seeing here. Because I maintain that Hezbollah and Syria and Iran constitute an axis of resistance, and that the US is intent on bringing down Iran. That is the ultimate prize, and the Syrian conflict is part of that campaign. Would you agree with that?
Well, John, yes, but I would add one qualifier. It's not the US. It's the US and its attachment to Israel. Israel is running this policy. It has been for decades. Take Hezbollah, for example. Why are they so popular? Because they are delivering services in Lebanon and elsewhere, like Hamas, its moderate people, are doing in Gaza and elsewhere. And people think that's a good idea. Hospitals, schools, and stuff like that. Okay, now, Hezbollah is part of the Lebanese government. They're the strongest military arm of the Lebanese government, and here's the only
Arab army to defeat Israel on the battlefield.
I wouldn't say defeat. They held them at bay,
yeah,
okay?
But which, in a sense, was a sort kind of victory, but I take your point, yeah.
So that's on the record. Now, what does Israel fear in the near abroad, let's say? Not Iran so much, but Hezbollah. Hezbollah, to the extent that it's fed or weaponized or armed by Hezbollah, well, that's the near threat. And that's a legitimate concern. So take the Israeli leaders. What do they need? They need to prevent Hezbollah from getting resupplied. How do you do that? You create chaos in Syria, because through Syria is the provision of Iranian military and other support for Hezbollah. So it all ties back to what Israeli objectives are. They want to make Hezbollah a eunuch. That's not going to happen. Hezbollah is going to keep being resupplied, if not by the Mediterranean, by other means. But the Israelis are very, very against that. And this is the near threat. Now, Iran? Well, Iran helps Hezbollah. Is Iran a threat to Israel? I can't believe that people forget that my colleagues, the honest ones, back in 2007, what's that, 10 years ago? Right. They did an estimate in which they said Iran stopped working on a nuclear weapon at the end of 2003. Now, was that some sort of left field assessment? No. It was concurred in unanimously by all 16 at that time U.S. intelligence agencies and expressed with high confidence. Okay. 2003, they stopped it. And people are still saying without any proof, that Iran wanted to do a nuclear weapon, but there is no proof that they're working on it. So this is all conjured up. And the U.S. press is also dominated, I would have to say, by people who are very, very sympathetic to Israel. And the only way that Jody Ruderin's article got on the front page of the New York Times on September 6, 2013, is because all the censors and the muckety-mucks from the New York Times were out in the Hamptons of Long Island sipping martinis over the Labor Day week. So these things happen, but they never appear in the U.S. media. And I dare say I've been in Britain. It's sort of verboten, as I see it, for anyone to raise this kind of criticism of Israel. But if you don't, you don't understand what's going
on. It's off limits, that's true. And it certainly blunted the analysis that needs to be understood of the region and of the conflict and why things are happening as they are. But can I just ask you how this decision by the CIA, bringing it back to the CIA announcement or the announcement of the US government regarding the CIA program, how does this play into Washington politics? Because hawks in Washington are understandably cock-a-hoop. They've been pitched into paroxysms of anguish at the decision to end this program, because gone with this program up in smoke is their plan for regime change in Damascus. I think I am minded now, I feel comfortable now in saying that the government of Bashar al-Assad is now secure for the first time, that even those who want regime change, that ship has now sailed. And we've seen this on the battlefield in Syria itself, where the Syrian Arab Army is now moving towards Deir ez-Zor, one of the last major cities that's been under siege for the last 5 or 6 years. And now all that remains to be seen is, when is the US going to abandon its other proxy in the conflict, which is the SDF, the so-called Syrian Democratic Forces, made up predominantly of Kurds from the YPG. How does this play out in Washington, Ray? Because I'm hearing reports, just quickly, that General McMaster, the Trump's national security director, is coming under attack because he's seen as not as amenable towards Israel and Israel's role in the Middle East as someone in his position is meant to be. And there's talk of replacing him with John Bolton, of all people, Mr. Bolton, Dr. Strangelove on steroids himself. Give me your view quickly, Ray, on how this is playing out in Washington.
Well, I think you owe an apology to Dr. Strangelove. Look, it's very clear. We need to recognize that there are still thousands of, quote, moderate rebels in Syria. They need to be extracted. And so seeing is believing. The major point to take here is that here Trump has taken on the intelligence people, specifically the CIA. Now, people who have been around Washington a while, like Senator Chuck Schumer, the ranking Democrat in the Senate, told a very prominent newscaster, look, he said in early January, he said, Mr. Trump has done something very, very foolish. And she said, that's Rachel Maddow. She said, what's that? And he said, he's taken on the intelligence community, and they have 6 ways from Sunday to get back at you. It's very, very foolish. I thought he was a smart guy, a businessman, that he would pick his quarrels carefully. He has done something very foolish. Now, instead of asking Schumer, are you saying the president of the United States should be afraid of the head of the CIA? She said, oh, we'll go to break now. Okay, give me a break.
Wow.
That's exactly what he is saying. So, be attentive. We'll have to see how this all plays out. I would be very careful for Trump to have his own bodyguards as well as the Secret Service surrounding him at this point.
You've been listening to Ray McGovern. I'm John White. Until next time, remember, the only facts worth taking seriously are hard facts.